Occult Confessions is brought to you commercial-free through the generous support of our patrons. Visit occultconfessions.com and click on Donate to help keep the history of the occult on the digital airwaves. Today, I bring you the story of a mystic and philosopher chosen as a child to serve as the world teacher, a messiah and vessel for a great otherworldly being who would usher in a new era of spiritual growth and development. Selected and nurtured within the Theosophical Society since his discovery on a beach in Adjar, his ascension would mark the end of their need for a great white lodge of ascended masters. He would push his thousands and thousands of followers in the Order of the Star in the East beyond the teachings of Helena Blavatsky into the light of a new dawn. Because, you see, this boy would grow up to shock his patrons and deny the role that had been assigned to him. He would not only refuse to be a guru to the Theosophical Society or the Order of the Star, but deny the value of any guru the worldwide, teaching that the truth was beyond any path, any master, and any religion known to humanity. My name is Dr. Rob C. Thompson. I am the Supreme Hierophant of the Secret Order of Alchemical Actors. Very pleased to bring you our first episode on Jiddu Krishnamurti. I'm here I've very carefully selected these two for their unique characteristics vis-a-vis spiritual matters. Johnny Cook is our first discussant this day. John?
Oh, hello, hello, hello.
How are things?
They are well.
You excited for this guy?
I'm very excited.
Yeah.
A very interesting fellow.
Yeah, yeah, he is indeed. And of course, Savannah Verrett.
Hello. I'm wondering what makes us so special about you picked us specifically to talk about this guy?
I would call John very much an active seeker in the religious realm, and Savannah, you an active rejecter in the religious realm.
Oh. Yeah, maybe.
So
I don't know. I feel like I've been pretty open to all the stuff that we've talked about.
Yeah, no, that's true. Yeah, yeah. You're not exactly like chasing it down afterwards, though.
No, you're right.
So but I think with this guy, I have a strange feeling, but I don't want to spoil it. I think you may be both on board by the time we're done. You'd be like, this is the guy. I'm with this guy. I found it, Rob. But we'll see. We'll see.
Well, that makes me excited. Sorry.
All right, cool. Let's pledge it up.
We, the members of the Secret Order of Alchemical Actors, do solemnly commit ourselves to a full and honest telling of the history of the occult as far as we know it.
Jiddu Krishnamurti was born on the 11th of May, 1895, in Madanapel, several hours' drive north of Madras in India. He was the eighth child and a male, much like the mythological incarnation of Vishnu, namely Krishna. And so, he was named after Krishna. I guess that was an Indian tradition. The eighth child, if it is a male, you name your child after Krishna, because Krishna was the eighth child.
Interesting.
Oh, that is interesting.
I've never heard of eight being a significant number outside of that.
I think for Hindus, eight has some power, yeah.
That's so many children.
It's a lot of children. Well, all survive, so, you know.
Okay.
He didn't have eight brothers and sisters. I mean, he did have eight brothers and sisters, but they, yeah.
And it wasn't like he was the first son, right?
No. Nor was he the last.
Oh, okay.
So, he was born into the Brahmin caste, so he's on top. And a horoscope cast for him showed that he would grow up to be a very great man. But he was a strange child and could often be found just staring up at the clouds in the sky or looking at a tree.
It's not good for your eyes to stare at the sun like that.
No. What was I saying? His older sister died in 1903 when she was 20 years old. And some of Krishnamurti's first clairvoyant experiences included visions of his sister. 2 years later, in 1905, his mother died, an event that would have a profound impact not only on his childhood, but his entire life, and the course of his life would be altered by the death of his mother.
How old was he?
In 1905, he's about 10.
Hmm.
Yeah. Krishnamurti also saw her after she passed, so he had some mediumistic experiences with family members who died. His father, Narayanaya, was a devout Brahmin Hindu, but he had also been a member of the Theosophical Society since 1881, and he kept a photograph of Society President Annie Besant on the wall. In 1907, he retired and wrote to Besant to offer his services in exchange for room and board. So when we say he's a Brahmin, my sense of Krishnamurti's biography, or from his biography, I've read a variety of books on Krishnamurti. This was my summer project and one of my favorite projects I've done for the podcast. My sense is that he wasn't wealthy. Like, Brahmin is the top caste, but I don't feel like the family was okay. But as he's retiring, he's asking to live on Theosophical Society grounds, you know. So,
who is Krishnamurti?
His dad.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Sorry,
Krishnamurti hasn't retired.
That's where I got confused. I'm sorry.
he's actually 12. So he's 12.
He's retired at 12.
Yeah. Oh man, he made some pretty good investments. So, Besant accepted dad's offer, and Narayanya moved with his two sons, Krishnamurti and Nityananda, to the society headquarters in Ajar. That doesn't necessarily suggest that Krishnamurti does not have older siblings, but him and Nityananda are the two younger boys that are still under dad's care. So off they go. In Ajar, the boys first cross paths with Charles Webster Ledbetter, a man who would set Krishnamurti on the path to international fame. Ledbetter's foremost qualities at the time were his psychic powers, which could precipitate communication with the society's White Lodge of Ascended Masters, and his strong interest in the education of boys and young men was probably his second most prominent characteristic. So he's a psychic who's a very influential in the Theosophical Society, but also increasingly controversial because of his strong interest in young men. Do you see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you guys, do you remember my episode? John, you listened to all the episodes. You remember my episode on Webster Ledbetter? Charles Webster Ledbetter, C.W. Ledbetter. He was the Anglican priest who converted to Theosophy with Blavatsky, converted to Buddhism, remained an Anglican priest, went on to become a liberal Catholic in Australia, like establish his own church. Does any of this sound familiar?
It sounds familiar, yeah.
And he was thrown out of the society anyway because of his strong interest in young men.
After this event?
He had encouraged boys to masturbate.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Like in front of him or
no,
like...
No, no. Just as like a practice to... I mean, for practical reasons. I mean, we can come up with 100 practical mm-hmm. reasons why he would advocate for it, but for that, he was considered to be a little bit off. However, having read now extensively about Ledbetter, I have defended him. I did defend him, and I said, we really don't know. He was probably what we would call today gay.
Mm.
And naturally, like we are, not naturally, I said that wrong. Society likes to accuse gay people of grooming and all that sort of pedophilia, mm-hmm. And that's all slander and libel. But in Ledbetter's case, he literally did have the close companionship of a variety of young men throughout his life. Anyway, we'll get into it.
I don't know if it was the same at the time, but also like stereotypically, priests also have a reputation nowadays of.
Yes, there's that. In Ledbetter's case, he's this charismatic, occulty Buddhist priest. Like, he's the bleeding edge of spirituality. So he's a very,
Controversial.
But charming, yeah. He draws these people to him. And Besant, Aini Besant, the president of the society, very important figure, she loved him. And she let him back into the society after they threw him out.
Oh, okay. So, yeah.
So this is after he rejoined?
Yeah, at this point he's rejoined.
Okay. Got
yeah,
it.
He's, anyhow. What was I saying? So, during his long stay in Australia, where Ledbetter helped to lead the liberal Catholic Church, he was known to almost always have a young man stay with him in his room, just to put a fine point on it. Yeah.
Mm.
He was also for a time extremely close with Aini Besant, who was a political force in the society, and who was largely responsible, as I said, for his reinstatement after he had been expelled, having witnessed Ledbetter's presence at the feet of the masters in the astral plane. Besant knew he must have been sexually pure, or else he could have never been initiated into their circle. Let me explain that just a little bit. The second generation of the Theosophical Society was in a very regular habit throughout most of the history I'm about to relay to you about Krishnamurti, of entering a trance state or while dreaming at night, transporting their astral spirits to meet the ascended masters in the White Lodge. Mm-hmm. So their spirits would go, and then in my best imagination of this, they would compare notes, and the similarity between their experiences would sort of confirm that they had had the same experience. Besant and Ledbetter actually wrote books together about, or that were, I guess, gleaned from these kinds of astral engagements. They would just go on trips together, astrally. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So anyway, Besant believed that since Ledbetter had this ability and the Great White Lodge accepted him and allowed him to visit, he couldn't be doing impure things. So,
I mean, that logic makes sense.
Yes. If you're Besant, I think it all clicks together. Mm-hmm. But if you're us, you may have additional questions.
Yeah.
And that's fine, too. Mm-hmm. It's worth noting that many of the boys Ledbetter mentored attested to the fact that their relationship with him was perfectly innocent. It's also the truth that some parents came after him, and that's what got him kicked out in the first place. Hmm. But many of these boys said, we have a perfectly normal relationship, or innocent relationship. If I had to opine, I might suggest that he may have had a series of consensual relationships, you know. But who knows? It's so long ago, it's hard to tell exactly what was going on there. But they could have very well been consensual relationships, if you know what I mean. Besant and Ledbetter, as I said, wrote books together, traveled together astrally, charted a course for the Theosophists into the 20th century together. Their significance to Theosophy can't be overstated. There's Blavatsky and Alcott, and then there's Besant and Ledbetter. They're the next generation.
So he's kind of like Besant's right-hand man at this point.
Yes. Okay. In many ways. Besant moves in a more political direction and goes away from all this psychic business. And she actually says, as this timeline we're talking about progresses, she reaches a point where she says, you know, Charles, you go do the psychic stuff for me. I can't do it anymore. I'm busy fighting for Indian nationalism or, you know, workers' rights or whatever she's up to, and doing the politics of the society too, and spreading this message of a universal religion and all this sort of stuff. So she sort of breaks away from the magic woo-woo business, and Ledbetter becomes he gets more and more woo-woo. So he's the Blavatsky to her Alcott, almost, if you want to compare them. Although she engaged in her share of psychic activities, Besant eventually, as I said, gave them up. So, Ledbetter had been asked to leave, as we were talking about, in 1906. She campaigned to restore him in 1908. In February 1909, he arrived back in Adyar, where he first met the brothers Krishna and Nitya. So, Krishnamurti and Nityananda. We'll hereafter tend to refer to them as Krishna and Nitya to spare me and the audience.
Was their last names different?
Krishnamurti and Nityananda are their full names. So the diminutive of the name would be Krishna and Nitya.
I understand.
Yeah, like I'm Rob.
Okay, I thought Krishnamurti was like first name, last name. Sorry.
No. Well, anyway. The 14-year-old Krishnamurti made an instant impression on Ledbetter, and the Theosophists said that the boy would go on to become a great orator and spiritual teacher. Ernest Wood, a young Englishman who edited the Theosophists and helped the boys with their homework, thought Krishna was rather dim-witted. So says Ernest Wood, but Ledbetter told him that Krishnamurti would go on to be greater than Annie Besant herself. He was destined to become the vehicle for the Lord Maitreya, a bodhisattva regarded as a future Buddha for our world.
How did he come to this conclusion?
He was psychic. He could see it.
Ledbetter saw it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I think it's probably true, and I've worked with, you know, I've known a lot of psychics and mediums in my day, that these folks see things that we don't see, that they see, you know, they call them auras. They have different names for the things they see, colors mm-hmm. that we don't see, surrounding individuals and that kind of thing. I think this is how Ledbetter's able to see this about him. And he's not wrong. it turns out to be true. Maybe it's a self-fulfilling prophecy. I don't know, because Ledbetter then raises him up. But let me do a little quick note about Buddhism. I'm not sticking to the script close today, but that's okay. When we talk about a bodhisattva, for those of you who are unfamiliar with the term, what we mean is a bodhisattva is an entity, a spirit, a soul, an individual who has committed to continue to be incarnated until all beings have been enlightened. In the case of the Lord Maitreya, I don't know that that's exactly the truth of all beings, but the teachings of Buddhism indicate to some extent that the Buddha is our Buddha. Gautama, Siddhartha Gautama is our Buddha. But when the teachings of Siddhartha Gautama are forgotten, a new Buddha will emerge to reintroduce the teachings to the world. So there isn't just one Buddha. There are not really infinite, but many, many Buddhas. There's an unfolding of Buddhas to keep the teachings of Buddhism alive through all time.
As many as are needed.
Yeah. It's the Buddhist answer to, you know, the Christians get all wound up about what happened before Christ and how, what to do with all the people who died before they could have been Christians because there was no such thing. And they go into all kinds of theological peregrinations and twist themselves into knots over this problem. For Buddhism, they don't. They just, this is their solution. That there's always a Buddha at all times. Ledbetter didn't believe that Krishnamurti was the Lord Maitreya, but rather that the future Buddha would inhabit him like a vessel to educate and enlighten the world. So he would be possessed by, in a certain sense, the Lord Maitreya.
Why would they need to do that? They wouldn't have their own body? They wouldn't be their own thing?
The Lord Maitreya exists in the astral plane with he occasionally will visit with the ascended masters of the White Lodge, but he's even like higher up than them. So this is his vehicle into this world to begin to unfold the teachings.
Okay.
Yeah.
So he is a Buddha, the Lord Maitreya?
He will be a Buddha. Okay. Not yet, but he will be. So okay. Krishnamurti is sort of like a bridge almost between Buddhas.
Okay.
Through his own psychic work, Ledbetter charted the many past lives of Krishnamurti, who he called in a multi-volume work, Alcyon. I wanted to read this, but it's incredibly long, so I visited some of it, but Lord. These books incorporated many of Theosophy's luminaries and regulars among the souls incarnated over and over again beside Alcyon to bring him to the present moment as a 14-year-old Indian boy and soon to be agent for a bodhisattva. So in other words, the tales of Alcyon are the tales of all Krishnamurti's past lives and how Ledbetter kept, you know, arriving as a, you know, different guy. Sometimes he's his washerwoman, sometimes he's his tutor, but in every life Ledbetter returns, in every life Besant returns. These same spirits congregate together to help do the work of Krishnamurti. So far so good.
So they're almost like mini Buddhas.
Kind of, yeah. Ledbetter likes to elevate himself in these visions, and he does a damn fine job of it. Yeah, and that ultimately is what cracks all of this apart one day. But yeah, that these visions of their significance in relation to Krishnamurti, yeah, are important to them anyway. According to Krishnamurti biographer Mary Lutyens, Ledbetter would take the boy on an astral journey to the house of the master Kuthumi every night for a short lesson, which the boy had to recall and write down the next day. It's difficult to overstate how quickly Ledbetter elevated the boy from obscure poor student to international personality. This happened, like, can you imagine? You're 14. You're like a guy who enjoys staring at trees and looking at the sky sometimes, and your tutor thinks you're not very bright. And this dude comes by, and he's like,
you are God.
Yeah, you will be the Messiah.
Yeah.
And you're like, okay. But then thousands and thousands and thousands of people agree with him.
That's terrifying.
It's yeah. Really something. Krishnamurti... throughout his life wrestled with the events of his childhood here in this moment, because to a certain extent it really did work out for him, but he wondered to what degree it could ever be replicated. how could others be enlightened if this is what it takes?
Mm.
Do you see what I mean?
Yeah. What's also like
they need their own Charles Ledbetter to pop in and out of their lives
to become, like Britney Spears or something in order to.
But it's also like, did he necessarily even have a say too?
He did not. No,
yeah.
He was selected. He had to go with the flow, or the flow was going to get him.
Yeah. So it's like, that's also not a way to become enlightened, right? I mean, be dragged kicking and screaming into it. Not that he was, but
I think that's part of Krishnamurti's struggle, or was part of his struggle, at least as he got older and older. He really did struggle with these sorts of questions about how to teach properly, given the fact that his life is not replicable, and maybe even we wouldn't want to replicate it.
Yeah.
It's difficult to... Okay, so the society had over 16,000 members and 600 lodges when Krishnamurti completed his first book. Let me say that again. 16,000 members and 600 lodges. This is an extensive organization for the early 20th century. So his first book immediately hits this huge audience and spreads well beyond. The lessons which with Master Kudhumi form the core of this book, called At the Feet of the Master, which is ascribed to Alcyon, his pseudonym, and published in 1911. The teachings, said Besant in a short preface, were given to Krishnamurti by his master in preparing him for initiation. For his part, Krishnamurti noted, with uncanny foresight, that these were not his own words, but those of the master's. God's plan, according to the master, is evolution, and humans must make themselves one with it. This work can be undertaken regardless of religion or creed. He's quoting him here. If he is on God's side, then he is one of us. So, a universal approach to religion already. Very theosophical in content. Very occult confessions. Following classical theosophical distinctions, he argued that the body sometimes wills things that the soul does not. And the soul is God. When your body, he says, wishes something, stop and think whether you really wish it, for you are God, and you will only what God wills. So the flesh is weak and wants things that are not good for the spirit.
Mm.
Blavatsky, with her hermetic Gnosticism, couldn't have said it any better. Showing her influence, or the consistency of Master Kudhumi's teaching, remember this now, decades after her death. So she's gone, and yet these prohibitions against material pleasure essentially are working their way through. The pleasures of the body, which are a Hindu principle that we are meant to enjoy sensual pleasure, now we're meant to question it, because Blavatsky incorporates this Christian Gnosticism with its suspicions about the body, not to mention Christianity writ whole.
I don't quite understand that, because what is your body then? Like, you have to have a body in order to be alive.
But it distracts you from the focus on the higher spiritual truths.
Okay.
It's the whole...
Because the body's not who you are.
Right. You're the thing inside.
Right. Mm-hmm. Okay.
It's like the soul.
Okay.
To a certain extent, like, if we wanted to really boil it down, it's the old, like, marshmallow test with a kid. You can have one marshmallow now, or if you don't eat it now, you can have two marshmallows later. The body will grab the marshmallow and eat it, but the higher angels will say, we can wait. They're not really higher angels, because you're still being a greedy little
Yeah, but I think I understand what you mean.
Yeah, I mean, theoretically, those are the first steps on, you know, delaying gratification so that you can achieve greater things. Like, we have to make great sacrifices to make art and suffer, and we don't eat lunch sometimes and that kind of stuff, you know?
We've been suffering for a bit this week.
Right. But we don't care.
But the body's not skipping lunch.
No, the body does not want to skip lunch. The soul says the art must, you know, get made. But the body's like, screw that, I want to eat.
Okay.
So are you seeing where he's coming from there?
Yeah.
Keeping with the metaphysics of the secret doctrine, Krishnamurti, or Kudhumi, says that the self is tripartite, with the body as a kind of horse that the self rides. I thought that was funny. We have our astral body, our mind, and our soul. The astral body is led around by emotion, and the mind likes to separate itself off, but both must be brought under the control of the central will of the soul. Spiritual work involves freeing the self of ego. Quoting him, all selfish desire binds, however high may be its object, and until you have got rid of it, you are not wholly free to devote yourself to the work of the master. All selfish desire binds. It's a bit Buddhist.
Mm-hmm.
We have to detach. Following the old yogic and Buddhist ethic, he said, have no desire for psychic powers. To force them too soon brings in its train much trouble. So also don't get obsessed with becoming supernatural, which Theosophists needed to hear because they were all crazy about being occult masters, like tomorrow or yesterday, preferably. Everyone wanted to be magic like Ledbetter. Release your sense of self and give everything over to the higher power. For the wise man knows that only God is great and that all good work is done by God alone. Complete surrender of the ego, replacing the ego with God. It's God's work and God's will. One of the strangest moments in the text for the way it presaged Krishnamurti's future philosophy was his commentary on ritual. He said, you must learn that no ceremonies are necessary, else you will think yourself somehow better than those who do not perform them. Yet you must not condemn others who still cling to ceremonies. Whoa.
Sounds like just mind your business.
Yeah, just don't judge people.
Yeah.
But also, church is kind of a waste of time. Meditation, ultimately, Krishnamurti will say, to a large extent, is not necessary. Anything that you employ as a means to achieve spiritual enlightenment or elevation is always already caught up in an ego trip. So you need to not.
But how? But how?
Well, we get that. I can't even do that today.
Yeah,
that's a very complicated question. Yeah. But it's the core of Krishnamurti's philosophy that ultimately you need to release yourself to the degree that you aren't even attempting to better yourself.
You just have to be.
You have to be, and then you will grow. The habit of self-improvement is not something you can will. Because then you're, it's an ego trip, yeah, but you're, well, it's a complex point, but.
Yeah.
It seems almost like, you know, the trope where there's like prophecies, and then if you try to stop the prophecy, it happens anyway.
Right. It's a bit of that, yeah. And.
Whereas if you just didn't bother with it, it would have worked out.
Acknowledging faults and attempting to correct them is a form of self-obsession as well. That we need to get over. So Krishnamurti, to a large extent, says you have faults, let it go.
Okay.
Stop trying, let it be. Move on.
Because I feel like, yeah, because like nobody's perfect. So, I mean, nobody will ever be without faults. So just acknowledge that you have them and move on. Don't dwell on them.
Yeah, dwelling on them or giving them any attention at all is simply, to a certain extent, growing them.
Interesting.
Yeah.
But does that make them okay?
What do you mean? The fault?
Yeah.
He's not saying that your faults are okay, just yeah. that there are cracks and there will be cracks.
But don't try to fix them.
Well, because in certain ways you then emphasize them. Okay. Yeah. His philosophy is down the road, yeah.
Okay.
You guys will get it. Now I'm going to have to keep you for all three episodes. As an adult, fully come into his own mystical vision, Krishnamurti would repeat this exact idea. But at the time, it contradicted a great deal of theosophical practice and the ideology of specific practitioners. Think about this. Ledbetter is a liberal Catholic. He's invented a whole religion that occultizes the Catholic Mass, the most ritually of the rituals.
Oh, so he's like saying this on his own accord. Like he's not being influenced by these other people like Ledbetter and stuff?
It's weird because he is only a child.
Yeah.
He's not even, you know, what we would consider an adult, 18. And this book is being published and there's this beautiful little picture of little baby Krishnamurti on there.
Aww.
I mean teenage Krishnamurti.
Yeah.
And yet Ledbetter is just sort of like glosses over this in his beautiful Ledbetter way. I think Ledbetter had an amazing ability to just say, well, he agrees with me at the core. This is what I'm thinking too. In the meantime, he's designing these elaborate Catholic rituals.
But Krishna's saying, it's not like Krishna's saying that that's what he believes. It's more like that's what he learned from the ascended masters.
So it's hard to question, you're right, if this is true. Yeah. If you believe your child communicates something psychic to you, right? My children are not very psychic, but my sister's kid saw my dad, who passed like 5 years before she was born, 5-6 years ago. But she saw him in my house. She said Santa.
Oh.
The only picture of him in the house is of him as Santa.
Oh.
Yeah, it's weird. But you can't question that, right? It's so strange.
Yeah.
I think that's sort of what's happening here too, is that, you know, through the mouth of a child, the child's innocence is less inclined to corrupt and twist to its own designs. So I think Ledbetter's letting it pass. But I mean, Krishnamurti's saying explicitly, Ledbetter, I know that you're wearing, you know, all these crazy robes that you're designing yourself and elevating, you know, wine and bread and lighting candles and swinging incense around. But honestly, I'm beyond that.
I'm over it.
I'm over that, yeah. We've moved on, buddy.
It's giving ego.
Yeah.
You do it as long as you need to, guy, but the cool kids, we're just not doing that anymore. The strange little rituals and beliefs revolving around the masters and their communications are another thing entirely, right? The initiations that took place in the astral plane, these are all ritualistic. These may not have looked like conventional ceremonies, but they certainly ran afoul of Krishnamurti or Kudhumi's prohibition against bigotry and superstition. Spiritual maturity demands that ritual be left behind, for there was a time when you needed them, but now that time is past.
It really is. We've moved on.
We've moved on, man. Quit going to the astral plane and asking to be initiated.
You're stuck in the past, boomer.
Ooh, yeah, Ledbetter is the boomer, yeah. I mean, they all are. He's calling out all of Theosophy, all these British and Indian adults and American adults and calling them boomers. You must accept suffering, by the way, as it comes to you. Separate subject. Give up all feeling of possession and focus your attention on things one at a time. You must make yourself one with the spiritual path, trust your master, and trust yourself. You must abhor cruelty of all kinds, particularly against children and animals. Schoolmasters must never hit their students. Krishnamurti was apparently caned with some regularity.
Oh, that one might be a little biased.
Yeah, he slipped that in there. And you must give all boys named Krishnamurti as many marshmallows as they ask for.
It's not me, it's the master saying this.
Kudhumi said. And the hunting of animals must never be done for sport.
Mm.
A bit of his Hinduism peeking through here too, the vegetarianism. He was also, I should mention, a vegetarian by birthright. But this Brahmin boy also argued that castes are an immoral superstition, whether Western or Indian, and must be abandoned. Much of this would persist in Krishnamurti's thought, with the notable exception of trusting the master. So he's going to keep a lot of these ideas, but Kudhumi is who he's going to eventually move beyond. Even Kudhumi. Annie Besant took to Krishnamurti and Nitya, and Krishna came to call her mother or Amma in his
Kudhumi
correspondence.
Kudhumi is the Buddha?
Kudhumi is just one of those White Lodge masters. Oh. Moria, Kudhumi, there's a count in Hungary. Yeah, there's this handful of occult masters, adepts, who taught Blavatsky for years and years and helped her write her books from the astral plane.
She got letters from Kudhumi, right?
Yep, yeah. They sort of exist in between this plane and
is
the next.
Is he the master that he's referencing, though,
Kudhumi
at the moment?
Kudhumi helped her write the book. Him write the book, yeah.
Oh, okay.
The Lord Maitreya, different situation. The Lord Maitreya is this...
Not involved yet, right?
Still haven't gotten there yet.
Okay.
He's only allowed to talk to the masters now the same way Ledbetter and Besant talk to them.
Okay.
But he's a child. So that's a kind of novelty that allows him to write his first
book. So when he's saying, like, the master, this is the person that you have to trust, he's not talking about Kudhumi? Or
he is talking about Kudhumi.
Oh, he's talking about Kudhumi.
Yeah.
Okay.
Not the Lord Maitreya. Hasn't arrived yet.
Okay.
You see what I mean?
Gotcha.
So he's calling Annie Besant mom in his letters.
Oh.
And she does come to fill in for his dead mother throughout his life. He has a really intense relationship with her. Up until his own death, long after she's dead, she continues to sort of be with him. But their father, Narayana, was not especially fond of Ledbetter, whose reputation with boys and young men did not sit well with him.
Mm-hmm.
After Krishnamurti was initiated by the masters into their order, Besant asked Narayana to pass legal guardianship of his boys over to her, and he consented. Because it was Besant. Ledbetter would not have been successful. And this becomes an important sticking point in the boy's childhood. Bissant wants that guardianship because she's planning to, like, tour the world with them. But Ledbetter's potential intervention and interest in them is a problem for Narayana, you know, biological dad, throughout. In 1911...
the brother's getting dragged along, too?
Yeah, the brother goes, too. It's kind of nice. Brother gets to go. Because how lonely would it be if you're just, like, this 14-year-old Indian boy and suddenly you're at all these meetings of, like, 30 to 70-year-old white guys and girls?
It sounds miserable.
So he's got his brother. He's got a buddy.
That's good.
Makes it a little more tolerable.
But the brother wasn't, like... magical.
He gets some notice. I mean, insofar as he's close to Krishnamurti, he comes to be regarded as a kind of supernatural figure himself, that he has a role to play in the Lord Maitreya's message. So he's elevated through his nearness to Krishnamurti. Like, there's got to be a reason why he was born the brother of Krishnamurti.
Mm.
But Krishnamurti's on top.
Mm-hmm.
He's where the focus is. Off they go. She brought them on a tour in 1911 of Burma and then England, where his arrival was anxiously anticipated by the readers of the Alcyon series, which had been published consistently over the past year. In London, Bissant established the Order of the Star in the East as a subset of the society, and Lady Emily Lutyens became a founding member and second mother to Krishna. He also called Emily Mom. After the boys were gone for almost 2 years, Narayana became agitated by their absence and filed a lawsuit against Bissant to get the boys back. The father alleged that Bissant had allowed her guardianship to lapse by permitting Ledbetter to take charge of the boys, and accused...
Did he?
This is uncertain. I don't believe so, personally.
Because she's touring them around, but Ledbetter's there. Interesting.
He shows up.
Okay.
And Narayana, it's sort of been, like, told or made to believe that Ledbetter would not show up.
Oh.
But he's inevitably going to show up.
Yeah, I mean, it's
he's been showing up for years and years and years.
I mean, the whole reason that this is happening is because...
It's because of him, he also accused Ledbetter directly of sexual impropriety with Krishnamurti.
Mm.
Without evidence, but still. He further pointed out that the society had semi-deified his son, and that society members...
Semi?
I mean, it is, I think literally it is semi-deified, but it's a lot, To semi-deify anyone's son is going to be...
Yeah, I just feel like it's more than semi. It's what I'm saying. Yeah.
Semi is almost more than enough.
He's
a half-god.
Just any deifying at all.
He's, what, 15 at this moment?
He said that society members in England had actually prostrated themselves before his son. He had no way of knowing. He would have had to have heard secondhand about these things. Bissant replied that she couldn't have possibly given the boys over to Ledbetter because Ledbetter was in India and they were in England. And besides, Krishnamurti was turning 18 in 5 months and could decide for himself where he wanted to live. For his part...
This is weird.
Yeah, this is very weird.
It makes me uncomfortable. Now that you said that, it's like, that just gave me the ick.
I think that Krishna certainly wanted to be with Bissant.
Yeah.
I don't know. The Ledbetter thing, I think, was...
I think it's this whole custody battle thing is what's weirding me out.
Because the biological father theoretically should have precedence. But Krishna's also turning 18 any day now. So...
But he also... I have feelings about the dad, too, because he's the one who gave them the right to take them.
I mean, maybe if it were me, I would say, my children, they're 17 years old or 16 years old. They get to tour the world. They get to see England. Okay.
Yeah.
You know, it's an opportunity
you
don't want to pass up.
But then you give your parental rights away, though?
I think that's probably why he had second thoughts and went back on all this Ledbetter stuff, which I expect is maybe, like, not about what was happening at that present moment, but he was thinking back over the last several years and what possible abuse he had exposed his son to.
Interesting. It's a weird situation.
Because he wanted to live for free.
Yeah, which is also weird.
Never move on to the Theosophical Society's headquarters.
Was he a follower
yes,
of those?
He was a theosophist.
Okay, I missed.
There are many Indian theosophists.
Okay, yeah. And that's why he was like, let mm-hmm. me live with you and I'll do work for you? Is that what he
yeah.
said? Okay,
yeah.
okay.
After he retired, yeah.
Gotcha.
Krishna seemed to be in no rush to return to Dad, by the way. By September 1913, the Order of the Star had grown to 15,000 people worldwide. That's just the Order of the Star, not the Theosophical Society, just his own personal cult.
You said that when he wrote his first book, there were 16,000 total in
yes.
the Theosophical Society.
So now we have the Order of the Star ballooning
Whoa.
Around him personally.
Oh.
Not everyone
An
in the Order of the Star.
18-year-old? That is scary. Right.
Well, but like Justin Bieber, man.
No,
and
I
Macaulay
know.
Culkin.
My
and
first
Lindsay
thought
Lohan.
Was these like YouTubers and stuff that blow
oh,
up
right,
into.
This day, yeah,
yeah.
I'm just aging myself with all these guys.
I just want to imagine Krishnamurti playing Fortnite.
Yeah.
I want to imagine him in Home Alone. Mary Dodge had put a car at his disposal and gifted him £500 a year for life. One of the like high society matrons of the Theosophical Society. She gave him £500 a year for life. He's 18. Further, in October 1913, Krishna asserted his independence from Ledbetter's tutelage, writing to his teacher in Adyar, "I think it is time now that I should take my affairs into my hands." He's writing to Ledbetter. "I feel I could carry out the master's instructions better if they were not forced upon me and made unpleasant as they have been for some years."
Oh.
For his part, Ledbetter wrote to Basan telling her that Narayana had been the tool of Basan's political enemies and it was all a kind of game being played at Krishnamurti's expense.
That's, maybe that's where my thing was, because I feel that
yeah,
it was.
He's a bit of a pawn.
Yeah. Because Basant's over here like, oh, well, this and that. And then the dad's like, oh, well, you this and that. I don't like, yeah.
A whole book came out about this. They published a book on Narayana's side about this whole thing.
Interesting.
Laying out his case. A court in Madras had ruled in Narayana's favor, and they decided to relocate. So the court says Krishnamurti must come home, and Krishnamurti says, "Oh, Anu, let's go hide." They
oh,
hid out in.
But is he 18 yet?
He's almost 18.
Oh, so okay.
They hide in Taramina with Lady Emily Lutyens, his mom number two, for fear of a kidnapping attempt by their father's faction. So they thought his father
what?
Would send someone to kidnap him.
His father has a faction now?
He does, yeah. The anti-Basant group, like there's a whole group of anti-theosophists who are, you know, gathering around him, and anti-Ledbetter folks. I mean, these are big names who have gathered enemies over the years. Krishnamurti.
While he's still living there, potentially.
Yeah.
This is crazy.
So he's in Taramina now. Krishnamurti was reading a book about the Buddha when he suddenly told the people with him, "The Lord Buddha is here." So now there's weird supernatural stuff happening. He means here now with you in this room. This was an early intimation of things to come, but little followed in the way of spiritual ascension or supernatural visitation for the rest of his time in Taramina. In the meantime, an English court found that the Madras ruling was in error. Since the boy's desire to stay in England, and said that Basant had taken the boys, had Basant taken the boys back to India, the court in England would have issued a writ of habeas corpus to have them return to England because
what?
Basically the English court was saying the boys have their own agency and can choose to live where they like. And if they want to live in Mother England, then jolly good.
Jolly good. You need to say it with an accent.
Governor.
There you go.
Our British listeners are pissed.
Governor.
We love you guys. Governor. I watched Mary Poppins. So despite the attention and prestige, or perhaps because of it, Krishnamurti was not especially happy. And he wondered to Lady Emily why the society had ever picked on him. So now this scandal is sort of getting to him emotionally.
Mm-hmm.
He hated the publicity and dreamt of a normal life. In 1915, he wrote to Ledbetter that he was not especially interested in the work, but that he would do what was expected of him, and apologized for not appreciating Ledbetter's contribution, which he was coming to do with maturity. Yes.
Well, yeah, because he was just a kid who liked looking at trees.
Yeah.
And now he's in this whole international scandal.
Yeah.
So even around the age of 18, he's wrestling with the two sides of it. You've given me a great opportunity, but I didn't really have a choice about this. So he's back and forth with Ledbetter. World War I was underway, and he attempted to help with the war effort. Yeah, by
wow.
the way. Yeah, here come the world
yeah,
wars.
Right.
He's going to live through both of them.
Christ.
He tried to volunteer at a hospital, but many didn't want him because he was Indian. And when a hospital in Dunkirk did accept him, Besant wouldn't let him go, instructing him to focus on his studies, which is kind of strange because Besant herself personally loved to nurse people. She, whenever, you know, there was a typhoid epidemic or something, she would be the first person, even though she wasn't a nurse, to go and help the sick. But in this case, she was being very protective of Krishnamurti. Mm. She did treat him quite a bit like a mother who didn't live with him very often, but still a mother.
Long distance mother,
yeah. Well, he's old, he's 18.
That's, you know? True, yeah.
I don't know at what point in the war that was, but Dunkirk was kind of a
serious
big deal.
Stuff, yeah. He began experimenting with spiritual healing, a practice he would occasionally employ but never became a significant aspect of his teaching. In this case, his brother Nitya was having trouble with his eyes, and Krishnamurti helped. Besant got him to study languages in order to better convey his ideas to various corners of the world once the Lord Maitreya arrived. He could do it in French or Spanish. He was frequently in the company of upper-class and upper-middle-class admirers and found their admiration embarrassing, telling them that there were thousands of others just like him. Chill out, you guys. All these rich people fawning over him.
Although, are there Krishnamurti?
No,
there really isn't, though.
There are a lot of Indian gurus, that's for sure. Krishnamurti was, by all accounts, heterosexual and had romantic admirers among the women who followed him. Remember, he's 18, 19. But he had been raised, as per the Theosophical Society dogma, with an aversion to sex. He fell in love, for instance, with the American Helen Noth, daughter of a national representative of the Order of the Star, but there's no mention of the relationship ever developing. He rejected those feelings and continued on his monastic journey. Ledbetter had selected a second boy in India, Rajagopalacharya, who he said would be reborn as a Buddha on Mercury. Now Ledbetter's getting up to some business here. Krishnamurti's questioning his allegiance to Ledbetter, so Ledbetter finds himself another boy. Yeah. Raja. What's interesting about Raja is that he would one day become a close associate of Krishna's.
Oh!
and definitely a subordinate to Krishna. Krishna became this great spiritual teacher, but Raja really wasn't interested in it.
Interesting.
So, at the time, though, Krishna didn't really care either way. He said the boy could accept his notorious place for 2 su, like a couple of coins. He said, if this boy really wants to be the Messiah, fine. He can have it.
Yeah.
It's conceivable that Ledbetter was aware of Krishnamurti's apathy for his role as world teacher and wanted to shore up his bets with a backup.
Which is crazy, because you feel like you would want your world leader to be like, I don't know, you know, because it's like the people who want it are the greediest or whatever, yeah.
Yeah.
The people who want power are the people you don't want to be in power.
Yes, exactly. So the fact that he's so like, I'll do it, but like, I don't exactly want to do it.
That's
a green flag. Yeah, sort of. I mean, I guess you kind of want them to do it, but I don't know. Want them to want to do it?
You should be into being the Messiah, I think.
But yeah, but that's fair. Because then you have a god complex.
And... Yeah, yeah. But Krishna, it so shapes Krishnamurti as a spiritual teacher, the complexity of this.
Yeah.
The egoism.
This is a whole, a paradox situation. Like, it can't exist at all.
And that's where he comes out of. I think he's born out of that paradox. We're almost done. In 1921, Nitya's doctors, the brother, found a patch on his left lung, a respiratory ailment that would plague him the rest of his life. Besant decided it was time for the boys to return to India, and Nitya wanted them to see his father, but the meeting was strained. The brothers prostrated.
Yeah, no
Can
kidding,
you imagine?
After everything that happened.
It's been, what, 5-6 years or so after that?
And they've, you know, basically said, Dad, we don't want to come home and be with you. But they prostrated themselves before their father and touched his feet, but he went and washed his feet because they had been touched by pariahs.
Whoa.
Yeah, he disowned them.
Whoa.
Wow.
Shit.
Krishna also did not enjoy much attention from his adopted mother, Besant, who spent most of the day in Madras at the offices of the New Indian newspaper. I will say for the Brahmin caste, by the way, just a note on the washing of the feet. When a white person would come into a room in India, if you were of the Brahmin caste, anything they touched, you would wash. Or if they touched you, you would wash where they touched you.
Gotcha.
So what he's doing with that gesture is suggesting that they're of the white people now.
Oh.
So it's almost worse in a certain sense.
Interesting.
Yeah.
You're no longer one of us. Yeah. So, Besant is in Madras, working on the New Indian newspaper. Ledbetter's no longer in Adyar. He's living in Sydney, Australia. He'd moved there 6 years earlier. And the boys carried on to Australia in April 1922 to see him and experience his community of Theosophists. He's basically got this commune going in Sydney. The society was slated to have a convention in Sydney, and many Theosophical luminaries would be there as well. Ledbetter had become a bishop in the Liberal Catholic Church founded by fellow Theosophist James Ingall Wedgwood, relative of the Wedgwood fine china, and had a crew of about a dozen boys ranging in age from 14 to 21 crowding around him at all times. Like Ledbetter, this is all in the literature about it. Yeah, true story. Like Ledbetter, Wedgwood was also surrounded by scandal related to his relations with young men. In 1919, he was the subject of an investigation and eventually resigned from both the Theosophical Society and the Liberal Catholic Church that he had founded. The Australian Theosophists were in yet another society civil war, with Ledbetter's pro-Christian faction on one side and an anti-church faction led by the head of the Australian esoteric section, T.H. Martin, on the other. So Sydney's like a hotbed of scandal. Everybody's fighting with each other. Blavatsky had been famously anti-Christian, and Martin preached a back-to-Blavatsky message, whereas Ledbetter's saying, "Go, let's make Christians magic again." So, Martin instigated an investigation into Ledbetter and Wedgwood, and Krishnamurti and Nitya ended up giving evidence together at a Sydney police station.
Whoa.
They testified that they had never been engaged in or seen evidence of immoral acts on the part of Ledbetter. But Krishna also wasn't especially impressed with Ledbetter's theology. So while they're defending him in the police station, Krishnamurti is also not feeling great about the commune Ledbetter's running here.
And he went there on his own accord, or?
Yeah, okay. Because, well, there's going to be this big convention of Theosophists, so Sydney's the place to be.
And he's still technically going to be the Messiah one day.
Yes, so the Theosophists remain very interested in him.
Gotcha.
He's a thing to see. By his own account, Krishna never read the Gospels, although he enjoyed the Old Testament Song of Solomon, "A Man After My Own Heart." it's at this point that the brothers leave Sydney and arrive in Ojai, California. And I think we're going to call it quits there today. We got to, you know, do some Halloween business here. But additionally, the first, Ojai, California becomes a very significant spot. It's the place where Krishnamurti is going to achieve his version of enlightenment. It's where he's going to see the spiritual truth. Eventually, Besant's going to purchase him a little cabin there, and he'll spend a lot of time there. It's where he meets Aldous Huxley, the writer of Brave New World, who's going to get a few episodes in the series as well. So having arrived at Ojai, I think we're going to go ahead and put a pin in it. And we're going to come back to the rest of the history of Krishnamurti in our next episode, and then follow up with my attempt to make sense of the philosophy of Krishnamurti in one more episode. A modest attempt. People spend their entire lives trying to understand this man's teachings. And he's still, I mean, they've studied with him personally, right? And he still said, "Yeah, you're not quite there."
Oh, we'll crack it. Yeah, we'll figure it out.
He's very encouraging, but yeah.
No, we'll crack it.
Oh, you and, oh yes, yeah. Us, the three of us will
figure it
out.
The three of us got it.
Oh, he died, I think, fairly beside himself. Maybe not beside himself, but he was very concerned at the end of his life with his failure to convey what the teachings, as they understood it, that people just couldn't get it. But we will try.
Maybe we're just not there yet.
Maybe we're the ones that are going to convey it.
Yeah, we are the ones who are going to crack it.
Yeah.
He's
been waiting for a Cult Confessions podcast. We're going to adjourn and declare closed this meeting of the Secret Order of Alchemical Actors until such a time as we get to do it together and do it again with Savannah Barrett.
Goodbye.
And Johnny Cook.
Goodbye.
My name is Rob C. Thompson, and I will be back with you for part two of Jiddu Krishnamurti here on Occult Confessions.